Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kelly, your host. He's here. Tom Nash is here, our good friend Tom Nash, for Open Forum. You can ask him anything you want, whether you're Catholic or not. You got a question about the Catholic faith. You got a question about the Bible, the Pope, the sacraments, the moral life. Tom's willing and happy to take your calls, 888-318-7884. And as always, I really do want to encourage those who are not Christian people, if you have got any questions or even objections, you know, you say, I don't understand why you Christians do this or that, all very welcome. We love to have those conversations. Tom is long associated with all kinds of Catholic media, including EWTN and us here at Catholic Answers, where we're still colleagues here at Catholic Answers. The author of some...
Yay.
Yeah, that's right. Yay, Tom. Welcome, Tom. I'll just now that you chirped in. Welcome, Tom.
Good morning and good afternoon.
All right, let's do the title.
Good evening.
I don't know where you are. If you say good morning, I'm okay. He's probably in Malaysia.
Evening where I'm at. Yeah.
Let's work through your books. So you wrote, you did not write the Bible.
No, I did not.
You did not write The City of God or the Summa. But now, so help me.
No.
Help me with the names of the books you did write.
The Biblical Roots of the Mass, which was originally called Worthy is the Lamb. Also, What Did Jesus Do? The Biblical Roots of the Catholic Church. Also, 20 Answers, the Rosary. And I would just like to encourage all of our listeners, viewers, to take advantage of our 20 Answers series. It's a great, you want a good apologetics library. That is a great discounted price for those. It's well worthwhile. Very distilled, dense, well written.
I was told that your rosary book did really well. A lot of people wanted 20 Answers to the Rosary.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. But I have to say, Todd Aguilar-Loro, our director of publishing, does a great job with overseeing that process. And I just love the whole 20 Answers. Plus, it's not just apologetics and a variety of questions on each different topic, but also there's some practical things to apply in terms of the faith, in terms of living it and sharing it, and things like that. So I think they're a wonderful tool that should be used in parishes around the country, around the world.
Tom Nash is our guest. It's Open Forum, 888-318-7884. Lines have been getting full and staying full all day, but I have to ask you something before I go, because I heard you did something, and I believe it was today, that no American has been allowed to do for a long time.
Yes, I got to go over to Canada. I go to Bioped. They do great work with orthotics. I've been going there almost 30 years, and it was nice to be able to go across. I had to get my COVID tests and all this.
Oh, you got to get a COVID
test?
Ago.
Oh yeah, even though I got vaccinated, I had to have a COVID test just as like the double check, and thankfully it came in just in time for me to get over the border and all that. So it all worked out. I love Canada. I love their national anthem. I love how they affirm God
in the national anthem. They tried to get rid of it, but they didn't get rid of it. They still affirm
right.
God. The national.
And I always like to say, make the sign of the cross by saying, God keep our land glorious and free. Oh, Canada,
Canada.
We stand on God for thee. Oh, Canada, stand on God for thee. That's it.
Thank you for singing the Canadian national, at least part of the Canadian national anthem. I feel like a baseball game should start now, but
you're right.
Okay, so you get to go across to Canada. Canada's been closed for like a year and a half or something. I don't know how long it's been since an American. Did you get the sense that they missed us at all, or I hate to say this, but I get the feeling that they're kind of enjoying not having us cross their border.
I guess it depends. It depends on the Canadians and how the Americans act, et cetera. But I was welcome. The great Catholic guy who runs Bioped, so I was welcome. But, you know, you funny mentioned that about a baseball game or a sports game starting. My nephew graduated from high school several years back, and they sang the national anthem. And, you know, in Michigan, you often have, and with Canadian games, that you'd hear the national anthem first, and if it's
then
in Canada,
Canadian.
You hear O Canada. So I started singing O Canada, and my sister, whose son was graduating, turned back, she smacked me, knock it off. But I decided that some people were laughing because exactly you have that.
You
kind
just
of
do it. You just get in the habit. You sing the American national anthem, and then you sing the Canadian, unless you're in Canada, in which case you sing the Canadian national anthem first, and then the American national anthem.
There you go.
You ready to take some questions?
Ready to go.
By the way, congratulations on going to Canada. Thank you, Canada, for letting Americans back in. I'm not hurt. I don't want you to feel like I'm hurt or anything. I don't even live near Canada. Jason in Vancouver, Washington. Oh, he could go over to Canada. Listening on.
He's in Canada.
Listening on Modern Day Radio. Hi, Jason. You there with us?
Yeah, waited long enough. Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, I'm so sorry you waited long enough. I apologize.
Take off, eh?
Go ahead. What's your question?
My question is, there's got to be some reference, 40 days, 40 nights, and they always say, here I am, whenever God calls somebody.
Right.
Yeah, they always answer, here I am. Why do they say
yeah, like Moses on the mountain. God says Moses, and he says, here I am. Why do these biblical people always say, here I am?
Well, I would say if God's calling you, it's a good response to give. But, you know, there are other cases like with Job, you know, you see him arguing with God. It's not always here I am. But I would think if one hears from God and knows that it's God, here I am is a good response because it recognizes the gravity of who it is speaking to you, and you're ready to serve. Hopefully you're ready to serve and ready to be on mission. But I don't think it's not a universal, but I think it's an appropriate response that recognizing the Creator, the Creator's addressing you, that you want to be available and to serve however He wants, because He's got our best good in mind, of course.
What do you think, Jason?
I just was hoping there was something deeper. I know he goes, like God says, I am. Most who wants to tell him, who might say your name is? He says, I am, right?
Yeah.
You're right. That means
I am. I didn't know from Samuel, right? She gives him, and then he's waking up and going to the priest.
Here I am, Lord.
He calls for me. He goes, no, that's God. And then it goes all the way down to Elijah. So, I mean, all these years, they all say the same answer. I didn't know what the significance was in that answer.
I don't think I could say to you, as you note, I am who I am. That means, you know, God's name, that His essence is existence. That is His nature for God to exist. That's why He says I am. But I think that is just an appropriate response. I don't think there's necessarily anything deeper, as opposed to the fact that someone, when God calls, and that became the tradition, and when God calls and you know it's God, that you're here and you're ready to serve, as opposed to doing a lot of questioning. So I don't think it has to, you know, you mentioned His name, God's name. And as I say, that means I am who I am is His nature, His essence, His existence. It's his nature to exist. But I think it just means, you know, that someone is realizing it's God calling and ready to serve. And that became a great tradition among the Israelite people, that when God calls, this is the appropriate response.
Jason, I appreciate the call and the question. And and you have that, it's an interesting, you know, you pick that out, and it's a fascinating question. And if you're interested in a whole variety of those kinds of questions, especially because you waited so long and patiently waited, I'd like to send you Jimmy Akin's book, A Daily Defense, 365 Days Plus One to Becoming a Better Apologist, because it's 366 questions that are faith questions and then a full page answer to each question. I think you'll enjoy it. If you'd like it, hang on the line and Thomas will get your information and we'll send you a copy of that book. Our number here is 888-3187-884, but I got to say good luck because the phones have stayed busy for the entire afternoon. So we'd like to get to you, but I just, I can't guarantee anything because the phones are very, very full. Tom was mentioning the 20 answers deal before. Let me tell you what that is. There's 47 titles in our 20 answers series. Tom wrote the one on the rosary, but there's ones on sacraments, on the Bible, on various other religions like Mormonism or Jehovah's Witnesses. There's some on Mary and Jesus. And so, you know, there's a whole bunch of them. And on all different topics, and you'll get a real apologetics education if you've read all 44 or 47 of them. And right now, you can get them individually for 65% off. That's a 65% savings on each and every one of those books. Just go check out the selection today at shop.catholic.com.
Let us help you with your question today on Catholic Answers Live.
The Aquinas Writing Advantage Program is part of Homeschool Connection's set of online courses for your Catholic homeschool. Homeschool Connections website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Okay, I've been a Catholic for 5 years, but I suffered under a lot of things due to my Protestantism as a Pentecostal, and I just want to personally ask God to bless you for your ministry, for everything you do, and the help that you give people.
EWTN, helping people grow in their love and understanding of God.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kelly, your host. Tom Nash is our guest this hour. And you are welcome to ask whatever you like, 888-318-7884. Up next is Ken in Altoona, Pennsylvania, listening to EWTN Channel 130 on Sirius XM Satellite Radio. We're very glad to have you, Ken. Go ahead with your question for Tom.
Yes, my question is, what is the soul, and do animals have it?
Yes, the soul is the life principle of a living being, and animals do have souls. We have immortal souls, that is, we have spiritual souls that live on even when we die, whereas animals do not. People will talk about, will animals be in heaven, and that's a matter of theological speculation. It was asked to St. Thomas Aquinas one time, will I have my dog or will I have my pet in paradise? And he says, his response was, if you need him. And of course, if you're with God, he wouldn't necessarily need an animal. But that's not the last word on that matter. But yes, a soul is a life principle. And we are distinctive in that we are, we have spiritual souls. We are body-soul composite. And when we speak about the spirit of a pure spirit would be an angel, and one who, after birth, you talk about ghosts, that would be the soul of a person who has died, a human person. So we are body-soul composites.
So, Ken, what do you think?
Yes. Well, it says in the Bible that the soul of all flesh is in the blood, and all animals have blood. So.
Yes.
Well,
life is in the blood. It says life is in the blood. Animals, you're talking about animals. All a soul means is to have a life principle. That is what causes it to exist. And it's a material soul, whereas we have an immaterial soul. Our soul, as a spiritual soul, is in our body in a whole and undivided way. Similar to how Jesus Christ in the Eucharist is present in the Eucharist in a whole and undivided way, such that if you break the Eucharist, you still have Christ whole and undivided in that piece that was broken. Does that help out?
Yes, thank you very much.
Well, hang on, Ken, because I got more help for you, because you're not going to believe this, but this is really quite a coincidence, I think. But I said, I don't know what a soul is. And so I thought, who can I ask? And we'll make a focus episode of it for our podcast. And so just last week it went up, and it's called What is a Soul? And it's with Carlo Broussard, because Carlo is a philosopher, and that's who you ask. If you want to know what a soul is, you ask a philosopher. So if you go to CatholicAnswersFocus.com right now, there's an entire 25-minute conversation where I just started by asking Carlo, what is a soul? And then he gave me the full Thomistic answer. Will you check it out, Ken?
Yes, I'm going to read that, definitely. Because
no, you don't have to read it. It's a show. It's a podcast. So you just watch it. Yeah, so
okay,
just go to CatholicAnswersFocus.com or go to YouTube and put in Catholic Answers Focus, and you'll come to it. Tom, you know a lot about the soul, so I will ask you this. Who, Tom, is the Queen of Soul?
That would be Aretha Franklin.
All right.
By the way, speaking of, we go from Motown back to Canada, and there's a tie-in here, really, that the people at Bioped, you take in your used shoes, and they will help with the soles, and they give them away to poor people. So it's called Souls, S-O-L-E-S, for souls.
Do you own a part of this business, Tom?
I do not own.
You've literally done an advertisement for them three times now.
I have no stock, but I just thought it was a nice tie-in with the Souls for Souls.
It is a very good one.
And that's nonprofit. That's not making any money.
All right, one more question about souls, and then I'll stop.
All right.
Who's the soul man?
You would probably have to say James Brown.
No, Sam and Dave. Well, James Brown is a soul man.
Oh, yeah, you mean the guy that I'm a soul man?
I'm a soul man, yeah, Sam and Dave.
Then I'm thinking, but wait a minute.
You think John Belushi?
Well, that Belushi and Aykroyd did Blues Brothers. But the, the hardest working man in business, James Brown.
That's James Brown, the hardest working man in show business.
James Brown. But he also,
I'm going to do another call. We're going to let you think about this while you're answering a theological question. Susanna in Miami, watching on YouTube. You are next, Susanna. Don't quiz him on pop music, but anything else you can ask Tom.
Thank you.
Oh, shoot. I wanted to ask a pop song, so, I'll
talk to him. Talk to you later, Susanna.
I like Susanna. All right. Sorry we let you down.
Hi. Don't worry. My question, I have a really good friend. He's sort of in like a process returning to the faith, but he's also been going to like the Freemasons and like going to their meetings. Obviously, he's not speaking a lot about it, but I do not know what to do. First of all, I really don't know much about the Freemasons, so if you could tell me here, it would be great. And afterwards, I would like to know, like, what could I do to help him come back from that to the Catholic faith? Like, to show him that that's not the way.
Okay.
Quick question, Susanna. Is he formerly a Mason, or is he just attending some meetings and thinking about becoming a Mason? Do you know what the exact status is at this point?
No, he's saying like he's curious, you know. He always said that he wouldn't do anything that would go against like Christ, but he's still going. So.
Yeah. In a nutshell, a Catholic cannot be a Mason. We have materials for more detail at CatholicAnswers.com. If you look up in Freemasons, you can find more information. But in a nutshell, it's an organization that has been hostile to the church. People will say, well, wait a second, what about all the great work they do with regard to kids with handicaps? No doubt about that, they do some good work in that regard, but that does not negate the fact that they have long been opposed to the Catholic Church. And a Catholic is not free to join them. Matter of fact, that's why the Knights of Columbus came into being, because of the fraternal organization of the Freemasons, that a lot of people were joining the Freemasons who were Catholic because it gave fraternal benefits, you know, life insurance or death benefits for widows, things like that. And so that's part of the reason why Father Michael McGivney started the Knights of Columbus. And a lot of people, too, for networking, will join the Masons. And I remember living in Steubenville, Ohio. They had a Masonic temple. They had a hall where people would gather. I remember they had a Christmas play there. I say, I will not go there. I don't care whether it's a good thing going on there. I'm not going into the Masonic temple just out of principle. And there was a person who served on council, or one of the people in government, and he was Catholic. And I said, you know, you're not supposed to. I gave him information that from the Congregation of the Doctor of the Faith that said, you're not supposed to do this. And he still did it, unfortunately. And I think a lot of people, because of the networking that allows that people can, you know, with jobs and things like that, that it can be of service in that regard. And I think you just got to be take a principled stand and say, no, I'm not going to, because this is an organization that has long been hostile to the church. It is not a strictly Christian. They'll say, you know, anyone, you know, kind of a higher power you believe, they will accommodate, but it is not strictly a Christian organization. And so you'll see Protestants that will be critical of it. And there's, you know, it is long plotted against the church in various ways. For example, Maximilian Kolbe talks about this and seeing what he saw at Rome back in the day and how they would speak about wanting to topple the Pope or the Church and things like that. But I would suggest going on our website, Catholic.com, and look for more information on the Masons, and then share that with your friend and encourage him, say, hey, whatever fellowship that they have there, you can still have friends with people who are Masons, but not to fellowship with them in terms of their strictly Masonic activity. And to trust in God and the fellowship of the Church and the sacraments to give him the grace and the blessings that he needs.
Susanna, what do you think?
Well, yeah, it's just that he understands that, and he's always saying, like, no, I'm not going to do anything that goes against my, like, Christ and everything, but he's still curious, so he's still going.
Well,
and he says that that's okay. Is that true?
Well, no, I would not say, but if he's going to the meetings and he's fraternizing them in distinctive Masonic activities, people, you know, curiosity, there's that old saying, curiosity killed the cat, but there's curiosity can be problematic, including with, you know, some of these activities that they can engage in, and the upper levels could be more spiritually problematic, satanic oriented, potentially. And I would just say it's kind of like people playing with a Ouija board too. You don't want to be, gee, let's try this out and let's see, it's okay. No, curiosity, when the Church has directed you not to do something, then you do not want to engage in activities that the Church has expressly forbidden. And therefore, fellowship again with whoever, just like Catholics can fellowship with whomever as friends, but you don't want to engage in distinctively Masonic activities. And I remember somebody was a funeral, and so the sister's husband was a Mason, and I said, you know, he's going there, that you can pray, but just don't participate in any, because it was going to be a Masonic ceremony at the funeral home, and she wanted to be there to be supportive of her sister. I said, well, just, you know, pray as a Catholic, and anything that's distinctively Masonic, refrain from doing, and pray silently against it. So I would just encourage you to talk to your friend in that regard. Show them our website, and also have them talk to local priests, because that's a great local reaffirmation of what I'm saying.
And Susanna, if you'd like, I will send you a book, Why We're Catholic, by Trent Horn. Maybe you just want to have it around while you are having these discussions about faith. You might find it helpful. Thank you very, very much for the call. I'm going to keep moving because I got to get another call in before we go to the break. But if you would like to call back and have if further things come up, we do this open forum Tuesdays and Thursdays, and we'd love it if you'd call again. Again, hang on the line if you'd like to get the book, Why We're Catholic. Let's go to, I do not know, I'm having trouble reading the name here. Is this just East? The name is East? Maybe I'm not having trouble reading it. Is your name East in Mount Shasta, California?
It's Heath.
Heath. Oh, okay. So there was just a little spelling problem there. I thought it was me for a second, Heath. I apologize.
It was hard to hear a minute ago. I didn't have good service.
Well, you're very kind to say that, because I don't want to say, I never like to say who's taking the calls, you know, when we have a mistake like that, and because it embarrasses Thomas if I say anything. So, Heath, go ahead with your question for Tom.
So, I work in a mill up here, and it's, I like to keep my rosary on me. I've been trying to get to where I pray it on my second lunch.
Yep.
New to the Catholic Church. I'm going through RCIA class with my wife.
Oh, beautiful.
Wonderful. Congratulations.
I've looked everywhere. Thank you. I've looked everywhere and read things and can't find anything about it. In my pocket, I'm worried about breaking it. I'm always against things in the mill and stuff. I'm just wondering about wearing it under my shirt.
Sure. That'd be fine. Kind of like a scapular. Sometimes people wear it outside and people say, is that appropriate? Well, I mean, it could be a means of evangelization these days. And I've seen some people in giving out rosaries, they might sometimes wear them. It's like, well, okay, maybe as a means of evangelization that they might themselves think about God and Christ and what he did for them. But for you to wear it around your neck and under your shirt would be fine. And I suppose if someone ever saw it, if it were outside your shirt, and it might be a great way to talk. I imagine if you're working at the mill, then you might not be able to if you lean over and there could be problems depending on the type of work you do, that you don't want to get caught in machinery or something like that. But nothing wrong with wearing around your neck in that regard, similar to like a scapular, for example, or some other religious metal.
What do you think, Heath?
Okay. That sounds good. I was just, everything I've read, it's yes and no, and there's never really been a exact answer I could find.
Well, I had the Irish relatives who said never wear a rosary because that's the tradition among the Irish. But there's many cultures where people have always worn the rosary as you know, as jewelry and then used it for prayer. So it is a yes and no, actually, because it's very different.
And if you wear it reverently and, you know, you see religious and they usually have it on the side, you know, by their what would be attached to their version of and religious garb of the belt, and so it's hanging down, so it's a visible witness in that regard. So I think the bottom line is to wear it reverently and be ready to talk about it if necessary. A metal chain might be better in terms of not irritation or.
Hey Heath, hang on the line. I'd like to send you a copy of my book, A Teacher of Strange Things: Who Jesus Was, What He Taught, and Why People Still Follow Him. As you go through the RCIA process, you might find it helpful. We'll be right back.
Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers is doing it again. We're holding our 7th annual Apologetics Conference this September in beautiful San Diego, California, and we'd like to see you there. Join us September 23rd to 26th for a lively and inspiring conference with an all-star lineup of speakers guaranteed to jumpstart your faith. It's a great chance to meet all your favorite Catholic Answers apologists and very special guests as we spend 4 days talking about worshiping and adoring our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. This is where it all begins. Don't miss what promises to be the event of the season. Join us this September for a conference that is sure to ignite, inspire, and inform your faith. Seats are still available, but they're going fast. Visit CatholicAnswersConference.com or call 888-291-8000 to register.
Here's a question. Is it really possible to be friends with someone who died 2,000 years ago? Maybe the problem is that we've grown way too comfortable with the story of Jesus. Nice man, right? Taught us to love one another, said not to judge people. We celebrate his birthday every year. It's time to put away this small, safe version of Jesus, says Cy Kellett. Nobody that bland could have transformed the world. In A Teacher of Strange Things, Cy presents Jesus Christ undiluted by sentiment, with all his radical words and deeds uncensored. Do you know someone, your son or daughter perhaps, or maybe your mom or dad, who needs the friendship of Jesus Christ? Do you? Order your copy of A Teacher of Strange Things by visiting shop.catholic.com today or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
This is Dr. David Anders. Are your friends or family discouraging you from becoming Catholic?
We can help on Call to Communion tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern.
Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. A little bit of groovy music, a little bit of open forum. Tom Nash is our guest. The consensus in the studio here among the entire staff is that I'm not a very nice person for calling Thomas out and for putting Tom Nash on the spot about Sam and Dave. I think I'm the least popular person here. Some days you're just a rotten person, Tom, I found. I don't know. Maybe you don't. It seems to me that there's probably not a day where Tom Nash was a rotten person, but I can tell you.
Well,
I got my rotten
I
person.
I have my day. Moments, and I think you're a fine person.
Oh, well,
I
hate.
And I've spent time with you, and you've been gracious to let me stay at your house and the Tom Nash room and all the rest of that stuff. So I affirm you and your wife and your family.
Yeah, the Tom Nash room. We named the room the Tom Nash room. And well, I wouldn't have named it the Tom Nash room though if I didn't if I knew you were from Detroit and didn't know Sam and Dave. Had I known that, no way that name of the room would have been.
Well, give me maybe I get a makeup Motown question later on. Redemption.
Okay. All right,
One and one.
You are one and one. Well, you better not get Aretha Franklin wrong. I mean, I have to hang up on you. If You can't prove.
That would be problematic.
You need to give, you know what you need to give Aretha Franklin? One thing.
Respect.
Thank you. Jason in Pittsburgh listening to
Redemption.
Redemption, EWTN, channel 130 on Sirius XM Satellite Radio. You are up next, Jason. Go ahead with your question for Tom.
Yes, good evening, Tom. I'm an Episcopalian, and I was just curious, how do Catholics justify the Virgin Mary being sinless in regards to Romans 3:23?
Yes. Well, we would recognize, I mean, that's oftentimes the passage that would say, you know, all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. And yet we know that there are children, right, who are affected by original sin, but have themselves not sinned. And so that in that sense, the word all was understood to be the great many, but not each and every. And this, in fact, was not an issue for Catholics and Orthodox and even Luther. At the time, you know, Luther had a very high view of the Blessed Mother, as did Calvin. So in that sense, we see what she is. We see that as Carl Keating says in his book, Catholicism and Fundamentalism, that it's understood to be the great many, because if you want to say each and every one, then you'd have to say each, every child who's below the age of reason, who cannot personally sin, would have sinned, and that's not necessarily be not the case, so that it's understood to be the great many. But it doesn't preclude an exception, and of course the exception is not because of the Blessed Mother per se, but rather because of God's blessing on her, of giving her this singular grace and then also her cooperating with it. And so that would be the basic response to that all does not mean absolutely each and every one, because we can see that there are exceptions with regard to human beings who have never sinned. That is, those who are below the age of reason and those who have died before reaching the age of reason. So they would be among the all, and yet they would not have sinned.
Okay, that was helpful. It wasn't a gotcha question. I'm just curious.
No, I understand. And you're Episcopalian yourself? Sure.
Yes.
Yeah, because,
so,
you know,
we have rough history.
No, but still, you know, there's a lot in common between, you know, when I've gone to England, and although there is the division between Catholics and Anglicans, especially when you speak of Henry VIII before Thomas Cranmer gets in there, that there is more of a connection and a closer union. And of course, there are, even though we would disagree in part on the validity of the sacraments, there are high church Anglicans who believe in the real presence and would, you know, believe that they receive it. We would charitably dispute the orders, but there's, even on the even on the Eucharist, there is similar convictions, and you know, also see other sacraments more so than you would say with the Lutherans and some other Christians. So I believe in affirming the good and charitably discussing what we disagree on.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank
God
you.
God bless you in Pittsburgh.
You're both in what was sometimes referred to as the Rust Belt, Tom, right?
Rust Belt, yes. Yeah. And
it's looking good, though. Detroit's looking better. Pittsburgh's looking better, don't you think?
And the Steelers are looking for a hopeful season. Big, serious football country there. Could we have a podcast one day on talking about the theology of football?
Absolutely, yeah. I don't know what it is. You're going to have to... You're going to have to tell me what the theology of football is. Don't do it now, Tom. I know how you are. Right. I wasn't saying now. But at some point, if we can discuss what it is.
It's a Catholic game.
Football is a Catholic game, really.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah. You look at, yes. I mean, it's not for naught that Notre Dame is, that it's a Catholic game. You look that it's great game at Notre Dame is football, and then you look around the NFL, Vince Lombardi, George Halas, Catholicism,
Newt Rockne,
all go together. Redemptive suffering.
Is that real? All right, we're going to have to do a podcast on that sometime.
All right.
Do you know how Newt Rockne died, by the way? Do you know?
I don't recall.
I'm going to tell you. After we take this call, I'll tell you how Newt Rockne died.
Okay.
Thomas in Augusta, Georgia, listening on 91.1 FM. Glad to have you, Thomas. Go ahead with your question for Tom.
Yes, I just had a question in regards to the leadership structure of the church, and what is it that prevents women from obtaining leadership positions such as bishop, deacon, and things of that nature?
Now, women can have various leadership positions in the church. They just can't receive holy orders, just to be clear on that. And of course, one of the most powerful, besides the Blessed Mother, whom we spoke about a little earlier, how about Mother Angelica, who being so influential, here we are on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network, she had a tremendous position of influence. And I think it said something about St. John Paul II that he didn't say, okay, thank you, little lady, for starting this, and now we'll let the boys take over. No, he understood that God was calling this woman, as he called other great women in the history of the church, including Joan of Arc and Thérèse of Lisieux, and anyway, of Lisieux. And he allowed her and God to work through her in a profound way. But more to the point, your question is that women cannot be priests because priests are called to emulate Christ. Christ is the bridegroom. The church is feminine. So it's neither incidental nor unimportant, as the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith said years ago in the mid-70s regarding why women cannot become priests, because they're not men. And this is not a question of equality or degrading women, but rather that the priest who is emulating Christ and is acting in persona Christi needs to be a man. And this is going, you could see the tradition of this, and this would be a capital T, but you say in the Old Testament it'd be a smaller T, but even for them it was very serious that you did not have, for them it would have been a capital T, you always had male priests. So it's always been a male priesthood. And so I remember somebody was in grad school journalism say, oh, so there were no women at the Last Supper, so it's, they don't get to be priests because they didn't get a dinner invitation. I said, well, it's a little more significant than that. This woman was of Jewish heritage, and she being of Jewish heritage, we should know that they've always, as you see going with Aaron and onward in the Levitical priesthood, that it was always men. And this is a particular role that men have been called to fulfill. And as since women cannot be bridegrooms, people say, oh, it's that simple. Well, it's profound, because Christ is the bridegroom. The church is his bride. And women cannot act in persona Christi as a bridegroom simply because they are women, which is not to say they are defective per se, but rather that we have equality. But in equality, there could be complementarity, that we can have different gifts without necessarily calling into question one's dignity. And again, as I say, the people, some of the most important people in the history of the church, beginning with the Blessed Mother, have been women and are women. I'm sure Cy can attest to his own thing with his mother and myself with my mother, that without great mothers, the church would not be the force that she is. And it is great Catholic women as the heart of home who've done so much over the years. And we also have the great women religious, whether it's Mother Angelica or Mother Teresa. So we can still see great leadership roles being taken by women, or St. Catherine of Siena back in the day, in a time when women were not necessarily listened to, but they recognized her holiness. So we can see that the gifts of women are indeed celebrated, but that they cannot serve as priests per se, and therefore they cannot be bishops. And of course, you know, it's interesting, one last comment about the Pope, is that he's known to be the servant of the servants of God. And even though some priests will misuse their service or bishop and use it as a, and historically have used it to aggrandize themselves, that is not what they're called to do. And when they do that, they don't do themselves or the church any favors. In fact, they act counter the mission. But a priest is called to serve, and as far as acting with regard to the sacraments, and most importantly, the sacrifice of the Mass, where he's acting in persona Christi in that regard, he is acting as the bridegroom. And thus, one who emulates him must be a bridegroom, a man who can only be a bridegroom in that sense.
Thomas?
So there you go.
What do you think, Thomas?
Okay. I was just wondering y'all's reasoning.
Okay.
I find religion very interesting, so I just have certain questions.
Did you say you're an atheist, Thomas?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you can look back, Thomas, that you see this in the Old Testament. And I would just encourage you, and God bless you for calling and your interest. And I would always ask you, encourage you to pray, say, Lord, if you're real, speak to me in my heart over time, and just pray that periodically. Say, Lord, if you're there, let me know. And I think your openness and your honesty are calling in. God will honor that. And I know that might sound odd because you're saying you're an atheist, but I would just encourage you to continue to be open.
Yes, sir.
Thomas,
God bless you, Thomas.
Can I send you a copy of my book about Jesus? Would you be interested in a book about Jesus or another time?
Personally not, but I thank you.
It's really good, though.
Thank you for the offer there.
I spelled everything right. We did spell
strange, check. Strange.
Well, I swear, we did spell check before we printed it. Like all.
And he's got this sense of humor. He'll make you laugh just like he did now.
I literally cannot give this book away. Literally. We'll take a break. We'll be right back with more Open Forum.
Hang on. Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment. Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Go forth and preach the good news. It's not just a suggestion. If you want to take more seriously the command of Jesus to share the gospel with those around you, consider joining St. Paul Street Evangelization. It's a grassroots organization that brings the Catholic faith to the streets in a non-confrontational way. Visit our website, www.streetevangelization.com, to learn more. And don't forget to like us on Facebook. It's time to do our part.
This is Conversations with Consequences, where we delve deeper into issues affecting our church, our country, and our core, the family.
As Catholics, we need to be informed, aware, and able to talk through some of the tough topics that we're facing in our culture and in our world. Conversations with Consequences gives us the tools to do so.
It's not enough to pray. We have to be a light for the world.
Conversations with Consequences, this Saturday at 5 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Killett, your host. I wrote a book about Jesus to introduce people to Jesus. Just tried to give it to an atheist for free. The atheist won't take it. But it would have done wonders for him, too. He'd have been so happy if he got that book. It's called A Teacher of Strange Things, Who Jesus Was, What He Taught, and Why People Still Follow Him. And the first paragraph starts with a conversation about atheists and what.
Can we say that if he wants to call back and give it to a friend that he can?
I don't know. I'm so deeply hurt by it. Yeah, I'm sure.
Come on, turn the other cheek, man.
Yeah, right. Now he's going to be, but somebody will call and be like, yeah, I'm from the guy they call from Augusta, Georgia. But actually, my name is Bill, and I live in Memphis, Tennessee. Really, Bill? What's your address?
Yeah, we get multiple people.
888-318-7884 is our number, and you better dial it because Tom Nash is here to answer your questions. If you're Catholic, you're welcome to call. If you're not Catholic, you're welcome to call. If you're Christian, if you're not Christian, you are welcome to call with any question at all, 888-318-7884. And I'm telling you, especially now, because we got all but one line open, So you have a very good chance of getting your question through to Tom if you want to give a call right now, 888-318-7884. Tom, I'm actually going to read you one of the questions that
you're going to mention Newt Rockne, by the way, if you don't want to forget.
Oh, Newt Rockne. Yeah.
What happened when he died? Was that a joke or serious?
No. He died in a plane crash.
Okay.
Yeah, the plane. This was before they knew quite what would happen to a canvas airplane if it got ice all over it. And the pilot didn't think of this all the way through. And this canvas airplane iced up.
God of mercy.
And they went down. And when they found him in a cornfield, I think, had his rosary in his hand.
Wow.
So if you're going to go with the rosary in your hand. 888-318-7884, the number. You are welcome to call with your questions. Let's go to John in Georgia. Boy, we're really big in Georgia today. I'm really happy about that. He's listening on Channel 130, Sirius XM Satellite Radio, EWTN on Sirius XM Satellite Radio. John, thank you very much for your call. Go ahead with your question for Tom Nash.
Yeah, appreciate you guys.
Thank you.
The signal is coming in loud and clear down here in Georgia today. So,
praise God.
I wanted to. I have I'm a Methodist, or at least officially I'm a Methodist, and also have been an Episcopal in my life, went to Catholic high school, married a Catholic girl. So I've kind of gotten spread around a little bit on the Western side of things. Recently, I have been, I got really interested in the Church Fathers, and I started reading a lot of the early, trying to read some, you know, the early Church Fathers, and really, you know, I'm kind of one of these guys that didn't even realize that an Eastern Orthodox Church existed until fairly recently, which I feel terrible about. But I've been trying to understand. You know, I've been reading like a book by Callistos Ware, and I'm trying to, I'm trying to understand what I don't get from my perspective why the split happened, and I know about the Filioque or Filioque controversy, but from a perspective of let me set the question up this way. Isn't the Roman Catholic Church more of an innovation and the Eastern Orthodox Church more of the original true church simply because the Roman Catholic Church actually it separated itself because of a new approach to things, most notably being that the Pope was considered the prime bishop overall in relation to the other five or the other four bishops. So isn't Roman Catholicism more of an innovation in Christianity than the Orthodox Church? And what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I would say, I would charitably say no, and St. Irenaeus, for example, would point out in his Against the Heresies, he points out that the bishops of Rome, and he gives the list of them, and he points out that it is this see, this, you know, diocese, this bishopric of which all in the faithful must agree, because recognizing the primacy that Peter received from our Lord, going back to that he was the one who distinctively received the keys of the kingdom, serving under the King Christ, and therefore a parallel to the Old Covenant, where you had a king, King David, and you had Shebna and Eliakim, for example, who were two of the people who served as prime ministers. We could see it in Isaiah 22, chapter 22, verses 15 to 25. And so we see that he is indeed affirmed, for example, as Ignatius of Antioch, excuse me, Ignatius of Irenaeus of Lyon, as having of primacy, and that they recognize he lists all the bishops going from Peter forward to his time. This was a guy who was, as his in the book says, against heresies. And we also go on and say, you know, you could see it at Chalcedon or Chalcedon, depending on how it's pronounced. You know, Peter has spoken through Leo, and the matter is settled. So we see the primacy of Rome, and not, again, this is all going back to Jesus, not because Rome is something per se special, but rather this is the see that Peter took up. Also known, people say, well, Peter didn't go, he says Babylon. Well, Babylon, as anybody knows about Revelation, and Jimmy Akin, speaking of 20 Answers, covers as well in some of his booklets on Bible prophecy and other places where Jimmy has written on these matters, that Babylon is understood as Babylon the Great was Rome at that time, because they were the great persecutor of the church. So it is because of Jesus Christ anointing Peter and giving him that primacy, not because he was necessarily the greatest, but because he is the one who Christ chose. And everything, again, as I say in my book, everything properly understood in Catholicism goes back to Jesus. And so we see actually those Eastern bishops for centuries and centuries, they're being united to Peter and going along with it. And in fact, we see in the East, for example, Saint Athanasius, you know, with the Arian heresy. And there he is, he's saying, well, hey, we're East and we're going to go Arian. No, he's in the East, but he's united with Rome. And he sticks with the true church and believing that Jesus Christ is the incarnate word, true God and true man. So in fact, the innovation would be the difference in terms of breaking away, and I say this charitably because we have the seven sacraments in common with our brothers and sisters in Christ who are Eastern Orthodox, and indeed our Eastern Catholic brothers and sisters, showing the universality of the church and the complementarity, the diversity that we have, 20 some rites of the church, and it showing that we can have a legitimate diversity within the universal church, but that we see that the big difference is not recognizing Rome. And, you know, going back to 1054 on forward, is that if you have a first among equals, what you end up having, I would say, John, is, and this is just the reality, is you end up seeing that nationalism, whether it's Greek Orthodox, Russian Orthodox, and that it's divided on nationality, and that there's disunity, for example, between the Greeks and the Romans, excuse me, the Greeks and the Russians, is because of their nationality, which should not take precedence over their oneness in Christ. And that's a vulnerability when you have national churches, as well as being much more likely to be inclined to racism and things like that. For example, whereas Augustus Tolton, an African priest, was very much welcome in the heart of Catholicism in Rome in the 1800s when he was studying. So if you look at the early church, going with Ignatius of Antioch, as well as, you know, you can see Eusebius as far as the recognition, the affirmation of the primacy of the Pope, going and Peter and his successors, beginning in the Bible, being affirmed by people like Saint Irenaeus of Lyon, and also, you know, later on in Chalcedon, with the affirmation that Jesus, as Peter has spoken through Leo, that this is an affirmation of the primacy of Rome in terms of teaching.
John, what do you think?
And authority.
Thank you. I mean, that's a great answer. I mean, I see what you're saying. I guess the thing that it seems like, though, until 1054, that no one was relying on the specific bishop of Rome to decide things. Everything was done in a councilor format. And then in 1054, it was a Roman legate that excommunicated the bishop, which really started that. And it was, and then just the last thing is that I totally understand what you say about the Russian and the Greek side of things, the nationalities.
Yeah.
But that seems to have happened with Pepin and Charlemagne in the West. And so,
You can have problems. You can have problems within fighting and infighting among Catholic bishops or Catholics in different countries. No doubt about that. I'm just saying that when you divide it in terms of the fact that we are the Greek Orthodox and they are the Russian Orthodox, because you're dividing it in that regard on nationality. But I would say I would go back and look at the early church and see the affirmation. And like I would say with Irenaeus, with regard to these councils did not have a legitimacy and authority unless the Pope signed off on them. And you see that the Pope is leading. There are various manifestations and affirmations of the Pope's primacy, whether it's at Chalcedon, whether it's at Ephesus, those councils, whether it's, again, Irenaeus or Ignatius of Lyon. You see that the exercise, the recognition of people outside of the Bishop of Rome recognizing his authority, which goes back and affirms the biblical basis of the papacy, which Peter had that primacy, and we see Peter exercising it. And remember, Jesus is the one, he prays for Peter in Luke 22. You know, Peter, Satan has requested to sift you, right? But I pray, you know, he has sift you all. He goes, but I pray for you in particular, Peter. We don't get this because it's in English, but he prays for Peter in particular, and that that your faith be strong, that you will confirm the brethren, and that after you fall. So he's even recognizing, you know, Peter, you're imperfect, but it's me that's going to make the difference in your life. And so we see that, again, Peter is singled out and affirmed in a distinctive way by Jesus, not only with the keys, but also in terms of confirming the brethren and also feeding the lambs in John 21. So we see the primacy of Peter played out in Scripture, and then also in the early church in various ways. We see Peter at the First Council of Jerusalem,
John,
and in other ways.
It seems to me like the questioning is very, very sincere. And with that in mind, I would like to offer you our book from our colleague Joe Heschmeyer called Pope Peter, which is a kind of a defense in 40,000 words of what Tom is saying in just a few words here. Would you be interested? I can send you a copy of the book.
Absolutely. Thank you. That's very gracious of you. I appreciate that.
All right. It's $25. I'm just kidding.
By the way, John, I love your Southern hospitality and graciousness yourself. It reminds me, having lived in Alabama, that Southern hospitality and politeness.
I really enjoyed talking with John. I hope he'll call again. Thanks, John. We got to go, though. Got the music. So I've been putting him on hold there. Thomas, we get his information. We'll send him Pope Peter defending the church's most distinctive doctrine. Oh, yes, defending the church's most distinctive doctrine in a time of crisis. That's from Joe Heschmeyer, who I believe is here tomorrow. Pretty sure we got Joe on with us. Tom Nash, thanks so much. Just had a great time with you. I always love it when you're on.
Thank you, my brother. Great to be with you and the listeners, and God bless everyone at Catholic Answers and in across America and the listening world.
And could you just for one more time say the name of that shoe store in Canada that you want everybody to go to?
Bioped, one word.
Bioped. It's across the border. Just go over the bridge from Detroit. You'll see it.
All right.
See you tomorrow. God willing, right here at Catholic Answers Live.